Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground.
Touchdown, Arizona!
That was beautiful! Oh, my goodness!
The latest news and notes on the Arizona Cardinals from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown!
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown! Larry Fitzgerald.
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
All right, guys, here's what we need going into week 9, Cardinals and Rams. And yes, I'm talking to you, Ron Wolfley, and I'm talking to you, Darren Urban, Jim Omohundro over there, Paulie Pencilneck over here, Paul Calvisi on Cardinals Underground, azcardinals.com. We need someone to go downstairs into the training room. Wolf, you get along swimmingly with Machine down there, your reigning NFC Assistant Trainer of the Year, Jim Machine Shearer. Go down there, get a walking boot. You do that. Then give it to Darren Urban. He's got to run over to his local trophy shop. He needs to have it bronzed because it's the battle of the walking boots on Sunday, Week 9, University of Phoenix Stadium. All these college rivalries, and they play for the trophies and the trinkets and all that kind of stuff. We need to have, like, a bronzed walking boot. Kevin Cobb wearing one. Sam Bradford out of one. Is either one going to play? Who knows? Wolf, what you play for? Like, West Virginia Pitt. Did you guys have something you played for, a trinket or a plaque?
We didn't play for any of that, Paul, but it was the backyard brawl.
It was a chance to be in the Big East or not?
Oh, that's not funny at all.
I see.
That's not even funny, Dave. Yeah. There are people hurting because of that, yeah. Okay?
3 more years in the Big East, Wolf, if you lose the lawsuit. But we're not talking about that right now. We are talking about Cardinals football, and we're talking about maybe the worst thing to happen to the Cardinals in Baltimore was halftime. Might have been the worst thing to happen to the Cardinals. True or false? If nothing else, you lost momentum, and you may have lost more than that.
You know what, Paulie? It's a salient point by you, which is surprising in and of itself. I will say I thought the best thing to happen to the Cardinals happened before the game even started, and then I would agree the worst thing happened at halftime. The best thing, I think, to happen to the Cardinals was the fact that Cam Cameron took so much heat the week before against Jacksonville on Monday night. He took so much heat all week long leading up to the Cardinal game for not giving Ray Rice the ball, not running the ball. And what happened was, in the first half, the Ravens came out and they tried to be a lot more balanced than what we've seen in the past. They tried to get Ray Rice going in that game, and I think that played right into the hands of Ray Horton's defense and the Cardinals. They played very, very well, created a couple of turnovers, gave their offense a short field, did a nice job on third down against the Ravens. And then at halftime, being down 24-6, being down 18 points, the Ravens came out in the second half. They spread the field. They went with an up-tempo offense, and the next thing you know, they isolated those two inexperienced corners, isolated them, and I think took advantage of the fact that we couldn't manufacture the pressure on Joe Flacco. And that combination, we've seen all season long, has really hurt the Cardinals. We saw it in the last 5 minutes of the New York Giant game. The Cardinals had a 27-17 lead. Eli Manning and the Giants had been balanced for the most part all game long. The defense played well against the Giants, and then in the last 5 minutes, they spread the field. The exact same thing we saw in the second half against the Ravens.
Is it too easy to point to the defense automatically? I mean, the Cardinals had a chance with the ball before the final possession by Baltimore where they kicked the game-winning field goal, and Cardinals offense couldn't get untracked.
Oh, I don't look, no one should sit here and no one is going to excuse the offense and not being able to get anything done. They had, what, 55, 56 yards the entire second half. You know, you can't let that happen. At the same time, if we're talking about trying to get a win here, which is ultimately what we're talking about, I mean, that's in both the games, both the Giants game and the Ravens game, the lead is there. However it got there, the lead is there, and the defense has to find a way to close it out. Now, would you like to see the offense step on a throat once in a while? Yeah, you would. And would you like to see them pile on the points? I mean, if you had 24 points at halftime and you only finished with 27, and let's face it, that last field goal came on a drive that was, if it wasn't for penalties, they weren't going to go anywhere near field goal range, the Cardinals. So, there's got to be – better play on both sides of the ball. But, I mean, right now the defense has to make a play, and I agree with Wolf. Sometimes I'm surprised teams don't just open that way. I mean, you would think in some ways that a team could bury the Cardinals playing that up-tempo from the get-go. I mean, even go back to the Steelers game. How do they kill the Cardinals? They were throwing the underneath stuff to Antonio Brown, and I know Mike Wallace had the deep one, but that's because you were so worried about what was going on underneath. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger threw for a ton of yards that day. It wasn't the vaunted Steelers running game that did anything that day. It was spreading the field and beating them up through the air.
And I know there's a lot of chatter out there about, okay, why didn't you pull A.J. Jefferson off Anquan Boldin earlier, right? He had an unbelievable second half. Well, when you did pull him off, what did Baltimore do? They went after Torrey Smith, and they completed a very critical 36-yard play that set up the game-winning field goal. That's who Patrick Peterson had been covering. As soon as Peterson comes off him, boom, they go ahead and they go to the speed of Torrey Smith, the rookie, and that ends up being a decisive play on the game-winning drive.
Well, I mean, look, there's obviously – when we know there's issues, and we know there's been pass-rushing issues, and we know there's cornerback issues, and we've been talking about it since we've been doing this podcast since training camp. We knew that was a very legitimate issue, especially once Greg Toler went down, but even before then, and it just plays out every week.
So the Baltimore offense made adjustments at halftime. Wolf, what about the Baltimore defense? They do anything different? Did they do anything to stymie the Cardinals in the second half they weren't doing in the first half?
I thought they came after Kevin Cobb a lot more in the second half. And again, I think a lot of that had to do with the desperation. You know, you think of the two possessions where the Cardinals got the ball, I believe it was a 2-yard line and the 25-yard line, deep in Baltimore Raven territory. You can't do an awful lot. You've got to play your red zone defense or goal line defense once they had the ball on the 2-yard line for the most part. So, you know, they didn't have a ton of opportunities, I felt, in that first half. And before you knew it, it was 24-6 at the half. In the second half, I thought they did pick up their blitz packages and their pressure packages and really start coming after Kevin Cobb and putting pressure on the protection for the Cardinals. And, you know, let's face it, that has been a huge question mark. That has been the proverbial thorn in the side for the Cardinals all season long, whether it's Kevin Cobb not looking very comfortable in that pocket, being flushed out of that pocket, or whether it's just a protection gaffe, a breakdown physically or mentally. It doesn't matter. A combination of the two, we know that once you start getting after Kevin Cobb, and if the protection breaks down, one complicates the other. And before you know it, you've got this perfect buzzsaw, and that's what we saw.
I like that. Complicates it. I
think
that's a great way to
one or another, and then there's complicating each other. So here's the other reason I say the worst thing to happen to the Cardinals was halftime, and that's because at the end of halftime, right before kickoff, there's a guy who's jogging out a good 60 to 90 seconds behind the rest of the team out of the locker room, and that guy was wearing number 4. And at that point, he said, uh-oh, because as Kevin Cobb told us on Monday, he said, well, he did a few things to alleviate the pain. And, you know, what I saw there in the first half, Pauly sideline of him trying to test out that foot, was reinforced and reconfirmed when he was the last guy out of the locker room and behind the rest of the team, thinking, okay, they had to do a few extra things on that foot. And sure enough, he was in a walking boot after the game, Darren.
Well, I mean, he's got turf toe, which, you know, as he was saying the other day, it doesn't it makes it sound a lot more benign than something like that really is. And he said, while he's had it before, he has never had it as bad as this. And it'll be interesting to see how this week plays out. I mean, the Rams are, as you mentioned earlier, you know, dealing with Sam Bradford's high ankle sprain. He hasn't played in a couple games, and it's still iffy if he's even going to be able to play against the Rams. And now you got Kevin Cobb on the other side, iffy whether he's going to be able to play in this game, and whether we're going to see John Skelton. And, you know, look, there's been so much talk about what they're going to do at quarterback and what's going to play out. You know, I am interested to see if John Skelton gets in, how that, you know, plays out, you know, with him and where he is in his development, because he hasn't had a whole lot of chance to play, and I don't necessarily see him as any kind of savior. But my personal feeling is if there's any way Kevin Cobb can play, he should play. I think he will play because I think he needs that time. And I don't think you need to be messing with moving quarterbacks in and out if you can help it. Now, if he's too hurt to play, he can't play. But it'll be, I again, very interesting to see how this all plays out this week.
If he doesn't play, I wouldn't be surprised. Gentlemen, I've seen the toe. it's multicolored. I can just tell you that much. It looks more like a Genoa salami hanging in your deli than it does a big toe. I'm just going to tell you right now. So when he says turf toe sort of belies the seriousness of it, yeah. I totally agree with him. It doesn't – I mean, what I saw there and the limp I saw after the game, I mean, okay, he's hurting.
Whoa.
If he plays through it, kudos to Kevin Cobb.
That bad, Paulie.
Yeah, it looked bad.
Oh, my goodness.
It looked bad. And he said it wasn't so much his mobility. It was because it's his plant foot, right? That's – he sort of differentiated. He said, you know, because he moved around
it's
okay.
His right foot.
And he even ran for a first down.
And
he
says when
half.
He was running, it didn't really bother him. It's the throwing that – which, you know.
It's that 3-5-7-step drop and plant on that foot, the inside of your foot and your big toe, and obviously stability. You ever have turf toe, Wolf?
Did As
you?
A matter of fact, Paul, I had something very similar to it. It wasn't quite turf toe, but I did take a shot for it. How about that? A well-dressed man with a black bag and blue juice shoving a needle right under your toenail. I will tell you right now, Paul, that hurt.
Under the toenail? Is that really necessary?
Under the toenail, Paul, it hurt.
Doc, how about the side of the toe? You know, how about underneath the toe?
Shot it in there, Paul. Just stick it in there. Had a big 350-pound offensive lineman laying across my legs. It was very cool.
Till this week, I really had no idea what turf toe was. Apparently, it's if you jam the toe severely enough, it stretches the ligament. And that's where you get the swelling and the bruising and the discoloring and all that. So it's probably more than you want to know, but all these years, I wasn't quite sure what turf toe really was. I did
see, but if you've got that though, Paul, just to, you know, from a mechanic standpoint, it's not only the plant foot, but it's also driving off that back leg, when you throw it. And sometimes you'll have a tendency to favor that thing and throw off the back foot. And we all know that's something you don't want with a quarterback for the most part, unless you've got an arm like Aaron Rodgers.
And Cobb said the velocity on some of his throws was impacted by the turf toe. So I saw, Darren, where you felt the need in your blog here on azcardinals.com to sort of break down quarterbacking and the numbers, at least crunch the numbers, 2011 versus 2010. Because apparently there's a school of thought that the quarterbacking, the caliber thereof, was better a year ago than this year. And the numbers obviously say no.
No, I think, and as I pointed out in the blog post, I mean, the bottom line is no one's sitting here and arguing that Kevin Cobb is playing well or that this team is doing well enough, and 1-6 you can't have. But if you just look at the raw numbers over not only through seven games where Kevin Cobb is compared to where the combo of Derek Anderson and Max Hall were, or even if you separate it out, obviously Hall really, really struggled, which brings those numbers down. But Anderson's numbers in themselves were still lesser of the two, and I just think that's something to keep in mind. Again, I'm not trying to sit here and say Kevin Cobb is doing the job, because people were expecting a lot more out of him than what he's doing right now. But the idea that, you know, that they haven't improved, I disagree with.
There's one quarterback who's been sacked more than Kevin Cobb, and that's Big Ben Roethlisberger, 25-24. There's four other teams that have given up more sacks than the Cardinals. We saw offensive line changes during the game in the second half. Jeremy Bridges went in for Brandon Keith, especially after one play where Terrell Suggs just drove him straight into the backfield. If there are more changes on the O-line, Wolf, would you be surprised? Ken Wisenhunt hinted changes could be coming, but he said for several weeks, and you're limited in the roster.
I would not be surprised at all. Look, when you're 1-6, nobody's safe. Okay, nobody is safe when you're 1-6, and it's been a very disappointing season. And when I say nobody's safe, I mean sideline reporters and color analysts.
My head on a swivel, believe me.
And get ready, Paulie. Nobody's safe. So, yeah, I would expect all sorts of changes from this point forward if they continue to lose. They're looking for continuity. They have to find that continuity, and you know, Coach Wiz is going to do whatever he needs to do to give them an opportunity to win. And if you continue to show that you're not playing well, and I don't care who it is that you're talking about, I think for the most part, outside of Kevin Cobb, I think for the most part, you'll see a lot of changes.
You saw the change of right tackle. What about left tackle, Darren? And let me put it this way, Levi Brown, regardless of the position, the situation is such that Levi Brown, his contract's up to the end of this year. The contract, or at least the number for next year, is a big number. Big, big number. It's a big number. Okay, so whether it's Levi or anybody else, the math and salary cap economics would say he's not back next year. Is there anyone out there? Do you make a change? Jeremy Bridges back out to left tackle? The young guy, Batiste? I mean, what do you think?
Well, Coach Wisenhunt brought up Batiste the other day, who played guard a couple games ago when he had to fill in for college. Do I think there's going to be a change with Levi Brown? I don't. I mean, I know a lot of people want that. I don't see it happening. There would be part of me, you know, and again, Jeremy Bridges has quite frankly struggled a couple times he's gone in for Brandon Key. So I don't know where he is right now. I know he played pretty well when he filled in for Mike Gandy at left tackle in 09. And, you know, to me, Levi's played right tackle before. Would you consider putting Jeremy back on the left side and put Levi on the right side, see if that would help some things? I mean, to me, I think about some of those stuff. I don't think that'll happen. I do think that Jeremy Bridges will get a chance to play right tackle. You know, I could be wrong. We'll see. You know, Wisenhunt said it'll be up to how they practice this week between Brandon Keith and Jeremy Bridges. But, I mean, I think you need to probably shuffle something. It's pretty clear that the tackles – and they went against two great pass-rushing teams the last 2 weeks. But at some point, I would think you got to do something.
Just to get back to the quarterback and Skelton for a minute, and based on the competition, you go from the number one ranked defense 2 weeks in a row, Pittsburgh and then Baltimore. If John Skelton goes against St. Louis, and let's face it, you know, they put together a bit of an effort against Drew Brees, but, you know, Sean Payton said after the game, hey, my team was really flat. Rams are missing their top three performers in their secondary. I mean, could you get some inflated and almost artificial numbers from John Skelton? And then what could that mean, .. when fans see production that, you know, you maybe wouldn't have seen against Baltimore or Pittsburgh, I guess is what I'm saying.
I wrote about it today. I mean, the most popular guy on the team is the backup quarterback. And I talked to John about it earlier this week and wrote a story about, you know, being popular. And he knows darn well, not only does he want to play, there's nothing to do with Kevin Cobb. He wants to play, just period, because that's what he wants to do. But he's very aware that a lot of people are calling for him to play and for Kevin not to play. And, you know, what would it mean? I do think it opens a can of worms in a certain respect. You know, what happens the following week? I mean, everybody, let's face it, a lot of people are waiting for the Kevin Cobb going back to Philadelphia game. That's next week. I mean, John Skelton plays pretty well. I just don't, again, I wrote this in my Skelton story, and I've said it on the blog, and I'm going to say it here again. If Kevin Cobb is healthy enough to play, to me, he plays. Period. End of story.
Agreed.
The only way John Skelton plays is if Kevin Cobb is too injured to play. And I would do that no matter what John Skelton does this weekend, if he plays.
Well, I think protection is going to be critical. It's going to be critical in this game, whichever quarterback is actually going to play for the Cardinals. Because as we know, Steve Spagnuolo is a guy that loves to be aggressive. And you watch him on film. And last week they did get after Drew Brees. They got him. They got there and they got six sacks against Drew Brees. But they also knocked him to the ground a lot of times and got some pressure on him. And that's what they're really good at. Before that game, they didn't have a ton of sacks. They really didn't. They were in the bottom third in sacks in the National Football League, but that doesn't mean Steve Spagnuolo doesn't continue to go after you and try to put pressure on the quarterbacks, right? And force the quarterback to play good. Force the quarterback to play well. That is what Steve Spagnuolo wants to do. And when you think about it, too, their numbers, they're not impressive at all defensively. But keep in mind, they've played against Michael Vick in that explosive offense. And that's when the Eagles really did a number on the Rams in that first game of the season. They played Eli Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Tony Romo, and Drew Brees. So when it looks like their numbers are a little inflated, well, they probably are inflated for a good reason, number one. And number two, I will say their real problem defensively is they cannot stop the run. They have had all kinds of problems with their front seven. They're dead last in the National Football League, giving up 166 yards per game. They give up well over 5 yards a carry per attempt. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten for the Rams. So I would expect to see the Cardinals give the ball to Beanie Wells if Beanie Wells can play. I think we're going to see a lot more balance. And they've been moving that way. Let me just say that. Mm-hmm. They've been moving that way over the last two games, the Pittsburgh game and, of course, the Baltimore Raven game, moving towards a balanced attack. But that means you've got to be in the game, of course. It means your defense has got to show up and keep you in the game. And I think we're going to see a lot of Beanie Wells because I think they want Kevin Cobb to be in that balanced offense. And that will help him stay in third and manageable situations, third and five, third and four, where you've got a lot better chance of converting. Because if you go in against the Rams and you find yourself in 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10+, 3rd and obvious pass situations, trust me, here comes the fire zone and here comes the heat.
Just real quick, jumping back, I think that's important for Cobb. It'd be important for Skelton too. For anybody thinking John would be the panacea to some of this quarterback-wise, and I like John, and I think he's got a chance in this league. But let's not forget, he went 2-2 as a starter. The two wins, both of his victories, he completed less than 50% of his passes. One of them was they couldn't put the ball in the end zone. They got Jay Feely scoring field goals and touchdowns and all over the place because the defense was putting them in good positions because Denver was so bad. And the Dallas game, they won by 1 point, and he did lead them on the game-winning drive. But that game started because they got 2 pick-sixes on defense. It wasn't because John Skelton was marching the team all over the field. So, I caution the optimism even if Skelton goes out there.
And if there's no Beanie Wells, then caution anybody who plays quarterback. I mean, that's a big hit for the Cardinals offense. I tell you what, I'll say this, and I know you guys probably want to weigh in this, you especially, Wolf, but, I mean, how about a word on the guts and the moxie and whatever other word or cliche you want to throw in there of Beanie Wells? Because yep. For years now, we've heard the whole Beanie is a weenie storyline and the durability questions and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll just tell you, what I saw during the TV timeouts and how much pain the guy was in and the angst and, the anguish on his face, and he took off his helmet and he'd have to come over to the sideline to catch his breath and sort of regroup mentally with the knee pain. Then he went back out there and he's running over guys and jack-stomping in the secondary. I don't know. If you didn't before, you got to give it up now and have a measure of respect for the toughness. Yes, we said toughness and Beanie Wells in the same sentence.
No, absolutely, Paul. I concur 100%. I've never believed Beanie Wells was not tough. I always believed it was a durability issue with his body. And I've been around guys, how many times I have been around guys that for whatever reason, they just could not stay on the field. Guys that I knew inside had that toughness. Guys that were tough, but they just, their body continued to break down. That's called mama and papa. That is DNA. There's nothing you can do about it. Your body just wasn't really made maybe to play the game of football because you're tweaking the hamstring all the time. You're tweaking the quad. Maybe you're rolling an ankle. Whatever it is, they're legitimate nicks. They're legitimate injuries. And to me, I don't think it's a toughness question or ever has been with Beanie Wells. I think it's a durability issue.
It's funny you bring that up too because and I completely agree that he was unbelievable. I actually made the point as he walked off the field, as bad as that feeling was right at the end of the game, to go up to him as he walked off and to tell him that I was really impressed with his performance. Because, I mean, I think that needed to be mentioned. I led my post-game blog about it. I mean, here's the other thing.
You weren't alone, by the way.
I know.
Baltimore Ravens were coming up to him after, and that's the kind of respect. I've been talking about this all year long, talking about the third rail of rushing the football, where you make a conscious decision not to go around somebody, not to put a little hiccup on them, not to do anything like that, but to lower the shoulder and run somebody over. And that stuff is showing up consistently, week in and week out on Beanie Wells. And you better believe the message is spreading. The message has been sent to the NFL. You get that big guy in the open field, guess what he's going to do? He's going to knock your face off, and that's going to help him so much if Beanie will just go ahead and realize, now I've got these DBs set up to a point where I get into the open field, I can give them that little cha-cha and then go around them instead of lowering the shoulder and ripping the flipper.
See, I wonder, it'll be interesting going forward watching, and you talk about being physical, and he was clearly physical in Baltimore and was running guys over. I don't know how much cha-cha he's got in him right now because of the knee.
It's a good point.
He can't make the outside. He tried to go outside a couple times, and he just does not. He can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
He has to run guys over.
Maybe then this will be the best thing that's happened to him, that he's got this little nick, and he's choosing the third rail because when he gets healthy, hey, here it comes.
No, you're absolutely right. They try the stretch, you know, and then they try a little toss sweep. He couldn't get the edge. There's no way. And they say, well, we're going to run it between the tackles. And then he started running guys over. Maybe the best quote all year in the Big Red Rage, arguably, was Larry Fitzgerald telling us about how funny how in second halves of games this year, he's having an easier time blocking DBs. there are corners who don't want to come disengage from the block. There's, oh, yeah, hey, let's make it look good here. You know, you got me blocked, so coach sees it on film, and I'm getting blocked by 6'3" Larry Fitzgerald, when in truth, they don't want any piece of Beanie Wells.
Ding, the most powerful tool that a player has at his disposal, film. Because other players watch it for 3 and 4 weeks. They see it for 3 and 4 weeks. You can get into a guy's head. You can make him believe something before you even step on the field based on the film study that they put into it.
The other observation I had on the sideline in Baltimore, other than the obvious stuff and the outcome of the game, was Joey Porter. You think he's vocal before the game and some of those huddles and getting guys together? You should have seen him the entire game. It was on. He was the guy who was halfway out on the field. I mean, he was all the way out to the hash marks at times. He was yelling at guys. He yelled at members of the offensive line when they weren't performing. I mean, he was up and down the sideline. My question is, guys, if Joey Porter is healthy, does he stay on the sideline? I mean, is it time O'Brien Schofield and Sam Acho, are they the guys now and Porter is a rotational guy when needed?
Well, first of all, when we say healthy, I think that's a flexible term. I mean, Coach Wisenhunt said last week that the knee problem Joey has is chronic, and I've heard from other places that he looks like a guy who's played more than a decade in this league, and it's caught up to him knee-wise. So he's not going to be healthy in the truest sense of the term. Now, whether he is cleared to play and everything, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if they're going to continue to start him and just, you know, break it up, or if they just move him to the bench. I think that's an awkward thing for Joey Porter, quite frankly. And I'd be curious to know, Wolf, as an ex-player, how you would think about that, knowing Joey Porter as you do. I mean, is he the kind of guy who is going to be able to accept that, going to the bench if he's healthy enough to play?
You know, I think at this point in time, I think yes. I think the answer is yes, because I do believe, and I could be dead wrong on this, but just listening to Joey Porter acknowledge the fact that he's getting older. He's getting older and might not have the same burst that he once had, and now he's playing on experience where he used to be playing on raw talent, and I'm paraphrasing Joey Porter, but you know, again, every player knows it. Believe me, every player is the first guy to know when your skills are starting to diminish, but you're the last guy to accept it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You're the first guy to know, but the last guy to ever really accept that maybe you're not the player that you once were. And listening to Joey Porter, I hear him make comments where he acknowledges that. So that tells me maybe at this point in his career, he's been in the league a long, long time. He's one of those legendary players that other players will talk about for years to come down the road. Having said that, believe me, I think he would accept that and almost be forced to at this point.
So as we wrap up this edition of Cardinals Underground, where's the marketing department exactly, Darren? Because I got it. The Battle of the Bronze Boot. That's going to be the marketing mantra for this game. Battle of the Bronze Boot. Wolf, are you the one taking the walking boot down to get bronze, or are you getting it for machine?
No, I'm not going to be that guy, Paul.
Because we know you have the bronze baby shoes up on your mantle right next to the silver spoon you grew up with. But I just figured maybe you knew a guy. You had a connection, you know, for the bronzing process.
Right, Paul. Yeah. How many Mustangs did your dad buy you?
Oh, wow.
I had a paper out, Wolf, at 15 years of age, slinging the San Jose Mercury News to raise the money for the car. That's why I'm under 6 foot, because those were valuable sleeping years where I was getting up at 4 a.m.
I see.
Which I'm still doing for some unknown reason. For Darren Urban, Ron Wolfley, Jim Omohundro, I'm Paul Calvisi. This has been yet another edition, the Bronze Boot edition of Cardinals Underground.